Well, we hope you're taking notes all the time, whether you're listening to one of the teachers that we air or the information that we provide to you. And kind of front page right now, a large event coming to Expo New Mexico. Freedom Celebration is set for June 28th. It'll get underway at 4 p.m. It's free to attend, okay? It's free to attend the event on June 28th at Expo New Mexico. It'll include, the fun zone, which has, the bounce houses and the different, things for the family to have lots of fun. There'll be a car show, food trucks, extreme sports, lots of music that evening. When the music takes the stage, it'll be Calvary MSC, followed by Jordan Felice. That's the plan. Passion is going to be here. What a heritage of great worship music they have. I'd say dating back, to the early, mid-90s. Looking forward to hearing some of their new music. Jeremy Camp will also take the stage later that evening. He's the headliner and a great friend to this ministry and to New Mexico, really to the Christian community with all the great music he's put out. Really the most important part of that evening is the message of salvation delivered by Skip Heitzig. He'll deliver that message on what true freedom is, true freedom found really only in Christ. This is an event that you want to invite everyone out to. It's free, right? Who doesn't like a free event to go attend? And you'll find that a lot of people that you might invite to church that may not come to church with you, they'll go to Expo New Mexico to go check out a concert and fireworks, by the way, at the end of the evening. One of the best displays in New Mexico. Look for all the details at freedomabq.com. Better yet, on your social media, share the link so others in your sphere of influence are well aware of it. Really looking forward to that coming up, and it's really just a couple and a half weeks away, June 28th. So make plans to be there. Joining us in studio, I thought of what to say, Ray, our longtime friend.
Yeah.
I didn't want to say old. Because
I'm 98,
Well, so. Listen, you may have me out aged, but you're in great shape, brother. I covet your healthiness. Ray routinely rides his bike, and a day like this, you're going to take advantage, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, well.
I crossed a milestone last month.
Okay.
110,000
wow.
miles.
Wow. And now, is that a single bike?
No.
Okay.
A few.
Yeah. So Ray's crossed 110,000 miles. The bikes, they take a beating, don't they?
Yep.
Yeah, but no, good on you. Ray is, he continues to teach at Chafer
Theological Seminary.
Theological Seminary, chafer.edu. I just asked him, they're getting ready for their summer courses, but, Ray's got other things he's going to be doing. But in the fall, back to Chafer?
Yes, probably teaching hermeneutics again.
But can we talk about what you might be doing here over the summer?
Sure, sure.
It sounds exciting.
Well, yeah.
You're a traveling man.
Well, just try to obey.
So where are you headed over the summer?
Well, just last week, everything just kind of was not dumped in my lap, but basically all of a sudden I have a trip to Ukraine. And in order to get to Ukraine, you have to go through Poland. And one of the best students that we've trained at the Word of God Seminary in Kyiv in Ukraine actually has lots of ministry in Krakow. So okay. I'm flying in there and probably do more ministry there than I will in Kyiv because it's harder to get people together because of the war.
Yeah. When you get back, we'd love an update on
that. Oh, I'd love to give it.
Yeah. Give the Christians here a better idea of what's happening.
Right.
And how they can, pray specifically for lives to be saved there.
Yeah. I'll have a pretty good report, I would think.
And as if that wasn't enough, Ray is part of the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico, and that's where we're going to spend a lot of our time today, but also your website, forhisglorynm.com. Ray, what will listeners find there?
I have three main tabs. One, I'm just a Bible teacher, so there's a lot of Bible exposition. Right now I'm going through the book of Revelation. We're in chapter 16, so everything up to chapter 16 is on the website. I've done much of Genesis, several books, so just exposition.
And
second tab is creation science, so all the creation science things that I do, including this radio program.
Which we did regularly. I mean, we continue to somewhat. A little different, but what explain, you can best articulate what it was that we went through. It was really almost a syllabus that we went through.
It was an overview of the main areas of creation science. We spent several weeks introducing the whole series and the whole relationship between science and the Bible. We spent several weeks on creation versus evolution, several other weeks on the Genesis flood, and we spent some weeks on the issue of time. Is the universe billions of years as opposed to what the Bible seems to give, a young earth chronology? And we defended, obviously, a young earth, and we talked about the science that supports a relatively young earth. So we covered all of those topics.
So you talked about on the website the three tabs you're teaching.
Creation science,
which, yeah.
And I've got entire seminary courses on the third tab. Seminary courses is the title of it.
Okay, and again, that's at forhisglorynm.com. And you mentioned books on the website. The latest, Science is God Shouting, the Biblical Foundation for Science. So you'll find the details about that on the website as well.
Right.
What do you, the cover's pretty obvious, but what do you cover in the book?
That relationship between the Bible and science. And I propose that you really can't do good science without a biblical worldview that takes into account God as creator. So he's given us lots of insight in the Word of God concerning the creation. And that's the starting point. In fact, that's what we're going to talk about today a little bit in terms of Babel. That's a starting point, not only in terms of science, but in terms of civilization, nations, and even language.
Okay.
So the book deals with those kinds of issues.
And Ray, you mentioned Babel. Coming up next Tuesday night is the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico monthly meeting. It's free to attend, and Ray will be this month's speaker. Was it last month?
Two months ago.
2 months ago, you did part one of Babel, a myth or history, why it is important for creation science.
Yep.
We're going to get a little sneak preview of what to expect Tuesday night.
Exactly. That's part of what we're going to do is I'm going to give you a taste of what I'll do in more detail.
Yeah.
And I've got lots of slides that are an important part of the presentation of the technology that I'll be talking about.
Yeah, sometimes I forget to mention one of the very, very best parts of the monthly meeting with Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico at Faith Bible Church, 7 o'clock. That's central at Moon. One of the very, very best parts of the monthly meeting is the cost.
Free.
It is. It is a free event to attend. And not only the event to attend once a month, but if you decide to become a member of the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico, Ray, what does that include?
Membership?
Yeah.
I don't remember what the costs are, but they're like $10.
Okay.
There's a family cost, I don't know, $25 or something, but yeah. So
it's minimal.
Yeah. And you can vote on officers and you can check out resources.
Yeah, there's a library available.
Library, yeah.
And of course, well,
we keep a whole range of videos and books that can be checked out.
So if you want to find out more, go to csfnm.org, Creation Science Fellowship New Mexico, csfnm.org.
And we especially recommend homeschoolers, but public school, young people. We want to reach the youth of our community.
Yes, and those resources can be available. All right, well, let's jump into a little preview of what is going to be happening next Tuesday night at Faith Bible Church, and what you want to share about Babel.
I will begin with a kind of a review of what we did in part one. And I spent a little time contrasting the two views, the everyday secular view that most people have concerning early history of mankind, with the biblical view. In fact, the secular view does not take into account Babel. It kind of ignores Babel and the confusing of the languages. The secular view obviously views most of those events, in fact, all of the events of Genesis 1 through 11, as mythological, legendary, and not historical. So one of the things I emphasized was the historicity of not only the creation account, not only the Genesis flood, but also the story that is contained in Genesis 11 of Babel, preceded by the Table of Nations. And in the secular world, they don't have an equivalent Table of Nations, so they really don't have a clear view of where the nations came from and where languages came from. And the Bible gives us a lot of detail. So that'll be the beginning, and I will kind of give a quick review, maybe as long as what I've given you here.
Yeah.
And then the emphasis will be primarily on the implications that we can draw from Babel and what we can see and observe in the natural realm, what archaeology has uncovered, and what we find in archaeological remains is evidence of very high technology, very, very early. The secularist ignores that. In fact, they don't report a lot of that because it's mysterious. Where does this technology come from? Secular world thinks in terms of evolution and slow progress and man taking long periods of time in order to gain knowledge and develop technology. Whereas if there was a Babel event that comes as a result of God scattering the nations, then those peoples would have carried pre-flood technology that God gave the early peoples that are recorded in the book of Genesis.
So it's curious and very interesting when you talk about the level of technology compared to a time post-flood.
Well, the assumption is there's no flood, so man began gatherers and hunters, etc. Agriculture began, so they developed implements to help them with agriculture. Yeah. And slow progress over hundreds of years, even thousands. But the Bible gives, in fact, there's a major problem between secular, even archaeology, even amongst those that believe the Bible, and the biblical chronology. Now, no one has solved it. We as believers have not solved that issue. But archaeologists even extend the chronology, even those that, like Steve Collins that believe in the Bible, they still extend it quite a bit because of the short period of time that the Bible gives us. But if you have a Babel event, then all of these people that spread all over the world would have carried that technology with them. And they would have, in a rather shorter period of time than is assumed, developed the technology that left structures that we can look at today that archaeology, in fact, some of them exist today. I mentioned last time as an example, when we did a promo for the first part, the pyramids. We don't know today how they could have built such massive structures in the short time frame that they would have had been built. Even the Egyptologists.
If with modern technology they were tasked to build them, and do we know how long, or is it speculation, how long it took to build the pyramids?
Well, even according to Egyptologists, remember these were built by pharaohs to memorialize themselves and as tombs. So they had to have been built within the lifetime of a pharaoh. And if you remember, I gave some calculations, just some basic calculations.
Yeah.
You can observe or measure and estimate that there were 3 million blocks that made up the Khufu pyramid at Giza. 3 million blocks. And as you observe them, you see they had to have been precisely cut. So they had to be quarried. They had to be precisely cut. They had to be transported from the quarry up the Nile down to the site near Giza, unloaded, and then placed in precision fashion. So they had engineering skills, and they placed these blocks on, I don't remember what the acreage, several acres that you can survey today, and it's level to about, I don't remember the exact number, 3/8 of an inch. How did they do that? So they had some engineering technology. And just a simple calculation in the lifetime of a pharaoh, let's give a little extra time, let's give 40 years, in order to quarry, cut precisely, transport, unload, place, you'd have to put 20 blocks per hour to be able to build that pyramid in 40 years.
Yeah.
I don't know if we could do that today.
Yeah, that's actually what I was getting at earlier. So very, very interesting. And again, more in-depth coverage as Ray speaks to the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico next Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. Free to attend. Hope to have you out there. Faith Bible Church, Central.
Central and Moon.
And Moon. And hey, we're up against the break. Ray, can you stay with us?
Sure.
We're going to come back and talk a little more preview of what Ray's going to be sharing next Tuesday night when we come back from the break on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect.
Well, thanks for joining us daily at 1 o'clock. You find archived broadcasts at abqconnect.online. Now, we mentioned the programs that Ray and I did together, several of them for weeks and weeks and months and months.
This is number 70.
Yeah. you'll find on his site at forhisglorynm.com. You'll also find them at abqconnect.online. Hey, I want to let you know about another free event coming up. Calvary Church is having a mega memory class. It gets underway Friday, July 11th. So that's 1 month from today. Listen, do you want to learn to remember, well, anything forever? I hope, you know, I don't know how long you'll remember, but maybe we'll join Calvary Church. Listen, whether you attend Calvary Church or not, this is for the general public. It's called Mega Memory, an exciting and practical class that'll teach you how to learn, retain, and recall information with confidence. It's a 4-week class, and it's is open to middle school students and older. And I want to say I read online at calvarynm.church. You'll find it under the events tab. That you know, other students can attend, but younger than that, they'll need to attend with their parents. But if you want to find out more, go to calvarynm.church. How valuable would that be, Ray?
I need it.
Yeah. You know, I do too. We probably all do. I know I do puzzles almost daily just to exercise my brain. Mm-hmm. So it's one thing to remember things, but you know, another thing just to keep active. I mean, it's like your physical body, your brain. I know, right. It's physical, but you know, the synapses, you don't lose, you use it, you lose it.
Yep.
And as you can tell by listening to me, I'm already losing it. So something to consider. Ray's here with us. He's part of the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico, and we'll be speaking at next week's meeting, their monthly meeting. It's the third Tuesday night of each month, free to attend at Faith Bible Church, Central and Moon. And next week, he'll be following up with part two. Now, a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago, he gave the talk on Babel, myth or history. Why is it important for creation science? Part two of that is going to be next Tuesday night. And Ray, briefly cover what we talked a little bit about, the implications of the Babel event.
Well, the main implication is we have the origin of the nations. In other words, where do nations come from? And like I said, the secularist does not have a table of nations that gives us kind of an outline of where even the nations that can be traced back from today, back even to Babel, many of them, like Egypt, for example, and the culture there. The secularist really doesn't see that continuity, whereas the Bible gives us the explanation. We have a table of nations, chapter 10, and then where did the nations come from, chapter 11. So that's one of the major implications. Where does language come from? Again, the secular explanation is basically evolutionary, and the thinking is that man developed language to begin with, but the Bible is clear that God is the one that has his own communication ability and language and built that into man. So there was one language. That's what Genesis 11 tells us. And because of man's rebellion, God intervenes to scatter the nations, and he used the means of confusing the one language such that it left behind several languages. And all of the languages can be traced back to Babel as well. So those are the two main implications. Kind of a secondary implication is if that happened, if there's a Babel event, then there has to be some common things in man's mind, his memory, that would be passed on to all of the nations. A common thought pattern, even the languages that were different have their origin there. And there is, in fact, evidence, and this is what the emphasis of this talk will be. There's evidence all over the world of very high technology that does not have a good explanation. In other words, you have to have all these evolutionary paths to develop all of this different technology all over the world. But it makes more sense that when the peoples were scattered, they took a memory of high technology with them and then established their culture based on that technology. So I'm going to lay out what we find in archaeology. So you can see these things. A lot of them are structures that have survived, but there's little bits and pieces here and there.
Well, with about the 5 minutes that we have left, Ray, can you walk us through some of the evidence of high technology?
Well, there's actually what we believe are pre-flood artifacts that show a high level of metallurgy. And these are mainly found in coal beds, and the evolutionists would say that these are millions of years old. If they're coal beds, then they're the result of the flood, and if they're in that coal layer, then they would have been deposited as a result of the Genesis flood. One example, a brass bell was found that has the alloys of copper, zinc, tin, arsenic, iodine, and selenium, and it has an iron clapper, which is different.
So an alloy.
So they had to,
previous to the flood.
Yeah, they had to somehow blend all of these metals in order to come up with this brass bell. So there are artifacts that have been found like that. Probably the best known archaeological remains are the pyramids, but people think they're only in Egypt. But there's over 1,000 pyramids in Mexico. So that same technology of cutting stones.
And it's not limited to Egypt and Mexico.
No, there's Guatemala, there's Italy, there's Sudan, there's pyramids in China, in Greece, and other places. Even in the U.S., there are some mounds that some believe may have been pyramids that have just been eroded down. So,
okay.
They're all over the world.
And I'm obviously, you know, they would have thought to do this. They can eliminate the fact, you know, the mounds you're talking about, eliminate that they're not just tells.
Yeah. Well, some of them are, but yeah. So there's things like that. There's also sophisticated architecture that shows that they had a knowledge of astrophysics. In other words, they, or at least astronomy, you might say, because they're aligned. In fact, the pyramids are aligned. The monuments besides the pyramids oftentimes are aligned either with the stars, some of them with planets, a lot of them with the solstice. In other words, the timing of the solstice. Stonehenge, for example. But you find these all over the world. So where did they get this astronomical knowledge? It makes sense that it has a common source from a common people, obviously, that Babel indicates. There's also some high-tech instruments that have been found that are very, very old. I'm going to kind of camp on one that we have a little bit of information on and talk a little bit about it. There's other high-tech knowledge of other nature as well that I'll touch on. In Egypt, for example, they had sophisticated dentistry practices that are evident from some of the mummies and some of the other remains that have been found. So knowledge like that, where did they get that knowledge? Where did all this knowledge come from? There are world maps. There's one in particular that shows the outline of Antarctica. And the only way you can determine that today is you have to have instruments that are able to not go through, but sense through the ice cap, because right. We don't know where the boundaries are today, apart from this sophisticated mapping. So how did they come up with these maps that are, we have maps that are of the remains of ancient maps. Where did they get that? And they had a sense, these maps show that they had evidence of trigonometry. In other words, they understood how the spherical shape of the world exists in order to make these maps.
They weren't flat earthers.
No, they weren't flat earthers. So those are some of the things that we're basically going to touch on. And
you just, I mean, you just teased it.
Yeah.
Here, so there's plenty.
I've got lots of photographs.
Yeah.
Show all of these.
It's going to be compelling. Something people will want to attend next Tuesday night at Faith Bible Church at Moon and Central. Ray Mondragon is going to be speaking to Babel, Myth or History, Why It Is Important for Creation Science. Reminder, Ray's website is forhisglorynm.com. You'll find a plethora of resources there. And in the fall, even this summer, chafer.edu, preparing for students to join the classes. But Ray returns to the classroom in the fall, headed off to Europe to go to Ukraine via Poland.
Right.
And when you get back, we'd love to recap the trip.
We can do it.
All right. Ray, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, stay with us. A friend of the ministry is going to be here to let us know about some new music. And if you're a young musician, you may even find some great insight on the way as we continue on after this on ABQ Connect.